I've got a few more notes here.
We can't. We're too old.
We're too old.
I don't have any wind left.
I'm Tommy. I'm still at it.
Hi, Tommy.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much. This is the question and answer portion. This is your chance to ask these people specific things about the start of NA. Hopefully, Jesse is going to play moderator with a microphone, and please bear with us because we have two microphones, and both of them, as you've known, they packed up. Just raise your hands, and Jesse will get to you with a microphone, and you can ask these three wonderful people some questions.
Okay. I don't know how you will ladies
around. I don't.
My bladder.
I'm I'm the car keeper. And I forgot when we were going around talking to you guys about these parts, we were supposed to let you know that when we called this one up, we wanted to ask you if you would please share your vision of the future of NA. And we forgot to let you know that part, so I'm going to give you that opportunity now if you would. Thank you. That's it, if you want to.
Well, the vision of NA.
I think Gene did. I really do. I'm just
that's the vision.
Right
here.
There. Right yeah. There. You are the vision by remaining here and trusting in God and cleaning house and being here. That really, really is. What greater vision can there be than that? Really. Agree?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the vision, I is this a partner? No.
Yes.
I guess the vision that I see, I wish there was more guys like Terry. That would talk about what's important in NA, you know. It's important for us to share our stories, but it's more important to help the newcomer. You know, I've got some pictures here that I wanted to share with people, and I guess I'm just going to share this one picture here. There was a guy. You know, I've never been one to really want to go and talk or in front of a group or, I mean, I sort of like it. It makes me feel good, you know, but my purpose is in working with a newcomer, you know, and I'll tell you, I had a wonderful experience, at the convention in San Diego, because I was a big shot there, you know. I mean, it was 14,000, 15,000 people, and I was up on a stage. I had a big picture up there, a big whatchamacallit thing with the, you know, shoulder pictures, and boy, it was, you know, and everybody, you know, thought I was really important, and I sort of felt important, you know. But I'll tell you when I felt more important, the thing that made me feel important and just lifted my self-esteem. When I went to breakfast, and there was a guy by the name of Tom that was laying there in front of the pavilion, and there was 14,000 people there, and nobody was paying much attention to this guy except that he was a drunk. And he was laying there, and he didn't know what he was doing or where he was going or what NA was all about or anything. He just, I don't know how he got there, but he was laying there right in the midst of the convention. And so I went down, I started talking to him, you know, he just reeked of alcohol. And so I said, hey man, you hungry? And he says, yeah. So So I said, well, here's my ticket. We'll go on and have some breakfast, you know. So I took him in there. It wasn't a big sacrifice for me because I wasn't that hungry. But I was elated because here was a guy in the midst of 14,000 people, and I was chosen to help this guy. You know? I was chosen to speak. That didn't impress me. The thing that impressed me is here was a guy that needed help. I took him in there. He smelled really bad, you know. And took him in, gave him some breakfast, and then I said, hey, you take care of this guy. I got to go see Chuck Gates was speaking. I had to go see him. I went over, came back, and got him and took him over to where Chuck Gates was speaking. And I realized this guy has shit his pants, you know. Wasn't any big deal because I think people ought to be able to be around that kind of stuff, you know. If you're going to be around newcomers, you've got to smell crap and piss and everything else, you know. And if you can't handle it, I don't know if you belong here, you know. But anyway, took him back and realized I'd have to wash his clothes. So I started asking people, hey, you got a couple bucks, this guy needs to clean up. We need to get him some new clothes or wash him or something. And so anyway, I started collecting some money from this guy and the other guy. Took him over to my room, and he took off his clothes. And I collected 70 bucks, you know. And so I told a couple guys about it. Brought him and took him in the bathroom. I said, hey, well, just go ahead and take a shower, you know. And okay, so anyway, he left his clothes there. I looked at his clothes, man. I mean, there was just shit all over. So I put him in a plastic bag, gave him to the lady. I said, "Can you go wash these, you know?" And I tied him up real good, you know. And so I went back and after she took him, I got to think, I'm feeling real guilty about that, you know. I mean, nobody's going to wash that. So I went back and I caught her. I said, "Hey, you know what? You throw those in the trash." So then I came back to the room, and here's a sack with underwear, Levi's, T-shirts. You know, some guy had went out and bought all this stuff and just left it there in front of my door. And somebody went down and bought a bunch of shaving stuff and all of, you know, that kind of thing. Brought them in. Got them all changed and cleaned up and everything. And then I looked at his legs, and his legs were just fried. He had had bandages on there. He had been laying in the sun. He had shorts on, laying in the sun for days or whatever. You know, his legs were just fried. Anyway, it ends up, we get a hold of another guy. We take him out, take him to the hospital. And anyway, that made my day. That made my convention. That's what it's all about. It's not about speaking, you know. And here's a guy... right here, that's him, his name was Tom, and when I got up to speak, we got up like this, and I took Tom up there with me, because I wasn't the most important person there, Tom was, he needed to be there, and I took him up there. And he shit his pants while he was... So I had to take him down. We went and we got him all cleaned up. And, you know, but that's what it's all about. You know? So I'd like everybody to take a picture of this. I'm going to set these out someplace. And take a look. There's Chuck Gates and myself with Tom. You know? On the main table at the NA convention in San Diego, 50th anniversary. What a blessing. What a blessing, man, to have a newcomer up there. That's the guy that belongs there, not us, you know, on center stage. So anyway, that's it. I got pictures of Lou Eccles and some other guys in here that, some things. Anyway, I'll put them out if people want to look at them, but that's the vision I see for NA. You know, is that people would get in and stop being big shots and stop. I'm not saying everybody's a big shot. I don't want to call him a big shot. He'll lay me out. Or Tom. You know. But, no. But I just, my vision is to see people get back to that simple dedication. Not the excitement, but the joy that comes from helping another human being, you know. And I just hope and pray that NA would we need the conventions, we need these kind of things, you know. But we don't need to lose our heart in these things, you know. We need to get the perspective right. And we need to draw together, you know, and work together.
Hi, my name's Bruce, I'm an addict.
Hey, Bruce.
This is a history convention. Part of my history was seeing Vita at my first convention. And I'm taking a chance, but I don't know if any of you knew Vita or if you wanted to share a story, maybe. She's a special lady in my early recovery, and seeing her convention just has always been in my heart. And I just ask you if anybody wants to share
it. I do.
Mary knows. Mary Jane knows everybody.
I knew Vita. I didn't know her well. But, because she came in when I was in San Jose up in the Bay Area. But I did get to know a little bit. And she was just a very kind and happy person. That was what I saw. She was always carrying around a newcomer. You know, and she was very involved in carrying this message to the addict that's still suffering. And that's, I didn't hang out with Vita. But, you know, I have fond memories of Vita. God bless her.
My name's Joe, I'm an addict.
Hi, Joe.
Joe.
We have a newcomer learning day put together. And I just would like to hear what all three of you would have as topics for our workshops for newcomer learning day.
You stumped us.
Yeah. What's a newcomer learning day?
We're basically just trying to have some speakers and have something like this, just to tell how we stay clean in the beginning and how we're staying clean now, and just try to, you know, pass that along to teach and to help them and have newcomers come there. We're going to have, you know, some free literature, some food, things like that. But it's a lot of love. It's real simple. And, you know, we're talking about different topics. I just wanted to hear.
These are guys on the program that are new within their first couple months.
Yeah.
Or
yeah, whoever considers himself a newcomer. We're not concerned about the time. Just they're all welcome. And, I just wanted to, if you were having a newcomer learning day, what were some of the topics you would want to share with the newcomer on? How to stay clean, how you did this, tools, recovery, that kind of thing like that.
I'm just going to speak just from my own experience of remembering when I was a newcomer. I don't think I could have handled a topic or a subject of just being even able to focus what I would want to think that would still be is like this. If you're going to have that kind of a format, just have, you know, one or two people on a panel sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and see if they want to, as newcomers, would want to ask whatever it is that they hear and would be moved to ask a question about. That, to me, would seem like staying at, the other seems like a little too formal. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just going from my own experience of remembering, because the one thing that is so wonderful is that I can remember what it was like when I was a newcomer. You know, of just what I could handle, what I could stay with, and I just loved just hearing, you know, because that takes the focus off. I could listen. You know, and then of course in the format now it seems like it's more media exposed to, you know, problems and all of that, so people probably wouldn't, newcomers wouldn't be as, you know, frightened or scared to ask questions, because they probably get drug education classes in school that they went through and couldn't read, whatever. But like that, to just remember that really the bottom line is us sharing our experience, strength, and hope with them, and seeing how that affects them to ask any question. That's it.
So not necessarily any specific topic, but just sharing of the experience.
No, I don't think so.
I wouldn't have functioned as a newcomer in that kind of a group. It would have been too formalized, and that's what I liked about NA. It wasn't structured. There was no rules. You didn't have to, you know, come in and salute the flag and, you know, do your little, you know, thing. But some of the best newcomer learning days I had were in a coffee shop with people after the meeting. If you want a newcomer learning day, grab a newcomer and go have coffee with three or four people with them. Best sobriety comes out of this coffee shop.
Yes. Yes.
I'm Daddy Rose Scotty.
Hi, Scotty.
Can you guys share some of your experiences from your first world convention? The first convention?
I don't even remember.
Some personal experiences.
Okay. I sort of like to comment on Joe's thing about the newcomer. I'm developing a ministry for guys coming out of prison and coming out of jail. Now the landscape business, so I take guys in and give them work, and I have 12 guys staying at my house now, because I have a big house, and then, you know, the house for the women. But and I'm a Christian, so I have to, and it's a Christian ministry, so I have to look at it from that point of view. But there's a passage in the Bible from the book of Jeremiah, and that's what we use for the basis for our ministry. And I'd like to share that passage with you because I think it has to do with exactly what Joe's talking about. And then this is how it goes. It's from Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future." And I think that's what the newcomer needs to know. You know, that there's a hope and a future, and they're not going to get harmed. There's plans for each one of us, and the plans are great. And we have to have trust and faith, because we don't know what those plans are. But we have to let the newcomer know that they're there. The plans for them are already set in motion. Plans to prosper them and not harm them. And they have to know that. And they have to know that because we've been through it. And once you give them a hope and a future, then they're going to want to do the things that will ensure that hope and future. But it's our responsibility to give them that. And I wrote, I'm not happy when I do 12-step work, I have a hard time getting NA members to come with me to help guys, you know. And I belong to a Christian church. And when I ask the Christian church to come and help me do something for somebody else, I don't get any help. And I asked them one time just to give me a hand, a bunch of old retired people in this church. I said, "Hey, would you give me a hand? I need to take this guy from one town to the next and get some things squared away from him." No, they didn't have time. They didn't have time. And you know what? The most important thing in the world is not money, gold, or silver. It's T-I-M-E. And people, in the church especially, would rather give you $5 than 5 minutes of their time. And that's what's wrong with the church today. And I got so bent out of shape by that, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I wrote down some things, some feelings that I had. It happened to come out as a poem, and I'd like to read it to you. The disciple. Oh, Lord, it's a disciple I'd like to be. But what I'd have to pay, I do not see. Is it as easy as it seems to be, or would its hardships make me flee? Lord, I'm weak and so afraid. Don't let me see the price that must be paid. Please don't let me fail for fear, but let me overcome by knowing you are near. So now I guess I must be ready, but still afraid, so let your hands keep me steady. Afraid of what I'd have to pay, afraid to lose what I've accumulated to this day. Afraid to soil my house with one so lowly as a mouse. Oh, what questions I do bear of the many losses I must share. Yet my final question is, what must I give to be like thee? Then Jesus answered with this plea, it's simply your life and possessions to set men free. And that's a heavy responsibility, because a lot of us have possessions. And we have a life that sometimes gets very selfish, you know. My life has. And I need to get back in perspective.
Thank you.
Okay, I think him and then who? I don't know. No, this guy, yeah. Okay.
About, maybe share some of the experiences from the first World Convention. Something interesting happening or anything.
Did you go?
From the first World Convention. Yeah, I was there, but... I don't know. I was just having a good time, you know. Mm-hmm. Were you there, Sylvia?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where was it? And I know if I was there.
In Japan. Weren't you there?
No. Not that.
It was in La Mirada. And the guy that actually put that together, Mel Hellman, is here, and he'll be speaking.
Yeah, I was
morning.
There. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think you might want to make sure that you go to that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a picture here of the First World Convention, so you'd like to take a look at it. But I think Mel could probably tell you more about that, because we just went to enjoy ourselves,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You're welcome.
Oh.
I'm Dinelle.
Hi, Dinelle. Right on.
Well, you've got a hope in the future, man. I want to tell you that.
There's a
yeah.
place.
I still have a residence in Silver Lake,
mm-hmm.
But I hung out at the Gospel Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I guess about a month ago, my cousin and one of my best friends came there and put me on a bus to Nashville, you know. And they just come get the bus, you know, get out of here and go to Nashville.
Well, they were pretty smart guys.
Able to, you know, get cleaned up in this area, because I have been trying for 5 years off and on.
Uh-huh.
And I guess the issue is that as a result of listening to them, I've been clean since I've left there, 28 days or whatever.
First time.
I was cleaned up for this.
First time.
The issue for me is that I missed two court things, you know, for, a diversion. I have a diversion that I was dealing with in California,
uh-huh.
and I missed court things. That now that I'm, you know, coming back to the sanity, I'm wondering what should I do about that, you know? Because I want to keep my sobriety and keep my clean time and work these steps and face over for the rest of my life, just for today. But I want to take care of that. I don't want to end up with a permanent record.
Okay, let me tell you something about Mary Jane's fifth husband. His name was Gene Lukakis. And Gene had been in Texas, and he had...
Two bitches.
Two bitches?
Back to back. No bully.
Yeah. Anyway, he was going back for the big bitch, you know. And he was liable to have to stay there for a long time. And he waited a few months. Why don't you tell him about it? Because you know more about
that. Yeah, he jumped bond and came to California with these two bitches hanging over his head back to back. And we picked him up, Paul and I, in front of the Radford Street AA Clubhouse. Was that Radford Street?
Yeah.
Radford Street Clubhouse. Took him to a meeting. He got clean. Let me give you a little background on Gene. They had a full life-size poster of him in the Dallas County Jail. Little Gene arrests on sight, constantly stealing with both hands. You know, they didn't like him in Texas. And he stayed around, got clean, got meetings, got a good footing on for himself in the program, you know, with his sobriety. And I think Sylvia was involved in either when he turned himself in. Well, he ended up finding the Rangers had come out looking for him. And he didn't want to turn himself into the Rangers because you get shot on the way back to Texas. They said he tried to escape. And so, weren't you there when he turned himself in? She went with them, a bunch of them took him in to turn himself in. He went back to Dallas. And on the plane, they went to the house, they asked him if he wanted a drink. And he was thinking, I'm never going to get out of the penitentiary. I'll be in Huntsville putting snakes in the pot while I'm picking the field for the rest of my life for some meat on my plate. And he said, right now, he said, I'm going to have to just do this. And he told me, I can either drink and not trust God, or I can not drink and trust God. He walked into the Dallas Police Department, turned himself in. Well, he was turned into the, went in to court. And we'd never had anybody. I mean, the biggest thing anybody did in trying to clean up the wreckage of their past was a little child support or some parking tickets practically. I mean, there were a few bigger things, but this was a big thing. Turned himself in, and he ended up in court, and people started writing letters from California. And the judge looked at him and said, you have more friends than I have acquaintances.
Wow.
And they dropped the charges down to 6 months in the Dallas County Jail with the caveat that he not return to Texas. Okay? But I would say stay, get time under your feet, get some friends, get some people that know you, you know, make arrangements with somebody, have people make arrangements for you to turn yourself in at some point. When you're solid. And have people write letters, you know, about what you've been doing here to the court in California.
Yeah, I guess that's the same thing. But the two people that came and got me, they're my, you know, my cousin and my brother, but they're both lawyers, so they go the same way. And I guess my other question is, can I just buy a meeting card?
I'm sorry. Did you want to say something?
No. It's all said.
What did he say?
His meeting card.
Somebody will sign it. You'll get it signed. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Come on, Michelle.
Next time.
Thanks. Oh, we're working out.
Yeah.
Okay, we're good. Say what? I don't want to say, well, that sounds like an asshole, and I used to sound like an asshole when I speak. Yeah, loud enough. There's a couple of things here. First thing, you know, that I've learned, this is a spiritual, not religious program. You know, there's something about newcomers and stuff that when I showed up to this program, that somebody would have been telling me about a specific God or a specific religion or shit, I would have been, fuck you, I'm out of here. You know, because that's what I did. And I just seen that three-letter word on the spell, you would run out to God. No, because I didn't, you know, but I grew up not believing, not caring, and I didn't think there was anybody there. That's the first one. But now, you know, I'm real particular about how I talk with newcomers and what I deliver to them and how I carry myself around them. I do not try to specify any kind of thing with them whatsoever, and any kind of thing in a meeting that might particularly any kind of religion whatsoever. You know, that's been one of my pet peeves. I have my understanding of God, and it took me a long time to get an understanding of God. The power greater than myself. The only power greater than me was the devil for years and years. This disease that I have, it kicks my ass every day. And talking about what we do for newcomers, you know. I sit in a meeting, you come in, and all screwed up in the head, I don't know what to do. Dress up, go get in my car. Let's go. We leave. I take them from the meeting, I take them to work, I take them with me, I drag them around, I drag them. Load van loads of them, things like this, conventions. They come back to conventions and not doing good. You know, I get lost in the things that we have to do to put them on sometimes. But when I show up somewhere and I've got six or seven people that's got 30 days or less clean with me, and I just throw them to the crowd and go out there. And I see the things that happen to them when they're there, and I see them a year later show back up with a sheet that they got that was signed because they happen to be there and look in their faces and they come back and turn it back in. Question is, can we just keep specific religions out of it? Well, I'm glad you just, you know, are helping with his question about what to do with your cucumbers. You know, I couldn't have run, like she said, I couldn't have understood a topic type thing towards me, but I can understand somebody showing me some love and making me feel warm, because I never felt warm. Give yourself. That's what it takes. So that's not what they say. Give yourself.
Well, to answer your question, you know, I wasn't a Christian when I came in 1962. I had a downfall emotionally, and I had some real serious things happen to me. I stayed clean and sober when I was 51 in 1986. And at that time, I found a new higher power, and that was Jesus Christ. And I've got a right to state in here that my higher power is Jesus Christ. If your higher power is Buddha or Swami Paramananda or Vivekananda, then that's fine. You know, I respect that. But I think we all need to respect each other's higher power, whatever that is. I don't try to push my higher power on anybody, but I do express what my higher power has done for me. So, and, you know, there may be some newcomers that may be attracted to that, and some that may reject it. But I'm not in a position to discern that. All I have to do is say, this is who I am, and this is where I'm at, you know. And then I let them decide for themselves. And if they have a problem with me, then I'll come and I'll talk to them about it, you know. But I think we have to have that kind of discernment if we're going to work as a body together, you know. If you have a higher power or you don't have a higher power, that's fine with me. You know, you're still my brother, my sister, and you still belong here. So, good. Okay.
Okay, she was next.
Hi, I'm Francine. I'm an
advocate. Hi, Francine.
Welcome from Hollywood's birthday. Woo! Understand about our primary target to help the attitude of the newcomers, the most important person as we. I have been in meetings where I've heard someone say, which had 13 years, she put her hand up and said how desperately she needed help. Nobody paid attention to her. They were listening to the newcomer. They all assumed she knew what to do. And she relaxed. I wonder, with your experience, what would your suggestion be?
I had a very bad time in the late 70s through the mid 80s. And nobody reached out to me. I went into meetings and people got up and walked away. All I can say is, no matter how long you've got clean, people still hurt. People need you to reach their hand out. They need to know you love them, that you care. And just because somebody's got a gazillion years doesn't mean they can't hurt. And that they can't go back out the door. All of us have feet of clay. You know, and I've seen people with 30 years go out the door. So reach out to that person. I'll give you a promise. If you reach out to who's suffering and nobody else does, it's a guarantee you'll be here next week.
Yes, okay. I want to say a couple of things. This is a history honor, so please try to keep your questions on the history that these guys did. And also, if you've got to talk in here, please take it outside.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about Sylvia W. And Sylvia W. was around in the early 60s, I know, mm-hmm. and helped write some of the literature, that's my understanding. And I'd like to hear a little bit about Sylvia W., and I'd like to reiterate what Tommy said, is that this is a history conference. Mm-hmm. And if we could keep the focus on history, mm-hmm. that would be good, because that's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jim.
What? I met Sylvia Wexler in 1962. I think she came to I don't know, half a dozen meetings, and she was Jimmy's right-hand helper, you know, for a long time. And through those years, when people were coming and going and nobody staying clean, and she had a friend by the name of Lynn, and they, during the first part of 1962, they moved out to around the Palm Springs area someplace, and then we never heard much about them anymore, but Jimmy kept in contact with them. And
do you know anything more than that, Sylvia?
No. So that was about it. She just showed up, and we realized that she was an intricate part of NA in the beginning, and Jimmy's right-hand helper.
My name's Isaac. I'm an
addict. Hi, Isaac.
What you guys have done and what you've seen others do in the past, kind of continue and keep going.
What kept us going, or?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things, and I think it's sort of particular to individuals, you know. But I think we sort of all agree that I think Mary Jane put it really well, you know, when she said you need to get together with people and go out and have coffee with them and go to their homes and visit with them and develop that tight bond, you know. I think that's the thing, you know. You can tell people about the steps, and everybody should know about the steps, and everybody should start doing them, but not everybody is capable of doing that. But what they are capable of is being next to you and having their arm put around you, giving you buying you a dinner, or giving you a hot chocolate sundae or something, you know, out in a restaurant, and or going someplace with you, or that type of thing. One guy that sort of impressed me, Russ Counts, he's been around for years, started taking me camping, him and his wife and me and my kids and stuff, and so it developed a bond with us, you know. So to do things with people, not everybody likes to do the same thing, you know. People like to go to movies together, or maybe people like to camp or backpack or hike or fish or work on their cars or something, you know. But get together with somebody and stay together, do things together. And I think that's an important thing, you know, to develop a fellowship. And you have to sort of work around and talk to people, you know, because not everybody you're going to be connected with, but there's somebody in NA that you're going to connect with, or two or three people. You need to go around and talk to everybody until you find that connection. And when you find that connection, hold on to it. Because when something powerful, like the spirit of NA, touches something good in a person's heart, connection begins, and that connection can't be broken. You know.
My name is also Isaac, but I go by Hi, I was just wondering, maybe this might be more appropriate for Martin. I was going to do a tribute to Jimmy Kay at that time, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he looks like. But I was wondering if y'all could share any kind of anecdotes about your personal experience with Jimmy Kay, either humorous or not humorous.
Well, you know, Jimmy was very determined person. And that's why he stuck with it when other people dropped out. There was three guys actually involved in 1953. I was in high school, and I went to high school with a lady by the name of Marilyn Von Henschel. And Gil Von Henschel was her father, and he was clean. He was a musician, and he was clean. And Gil and Jimmy and a guy named Cy Malis, all were together trying to develop this thing for addicts, you know. And so, Gil dropped out because I think he was sort of religious like me, and he didn't like them or they didn't like him, but I'm sticking it out, and he didn't, you know. But anyway, as far as I know, he's still clean. But Cy Malis was a guy a lot like Jimmy, who was very strong and determined and self-willed, and it didn't pay off for Cy because he separated from Jimmy, and he used to go to the North Hollywood Club where the addicts sort of associated, and he had a lot of resentments. And while he was in the club there, he got angry at somebody and started to take a swing at him and dropped dead. And so that was a pretty sad thing. Cy Malis was a movie director. In fact, Cy was, I think it was either the same day that I came in or the next day, he talked to me, and he says, "Hey, Gene," he says, "well, you got a family?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, how many kids you got, you know?" And I think I had 5 at that time. I got 7 now. I couldn't control myself even after I got to the meeting. but I want to tell you, I got 16 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren, man. And I'm the happiest guy in the world. I got joy in my heart because of that. But anyway, Cy told me, he says, "Man," he says, "you got a family, man. You need to straighten up and start taking care of that family, you know." He says, "You're in the right place." So anyway, but that was Cy Malis. But Jimmy was self-willed and determined. And when other people couldn't handle that, they took off. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy stuck it out, you know. And Jimmy was, I went over to his house. His house was about the size of, from this seat to that one over there, and probably about back to the guy with a towel around his neck, you know, about that high. And it was packed with tapes and tape recorders and books and all kind of stuff, you know. And he had a little couch in there. You could only get in his living room, the aisle, if you wanted to sit down, was about this big. There were chairs on that side, a couch on this side. And it was an old wooden house. Well, Jimmy's not around, so I guess I could call it a shack, but he's probably looking down and saying, "That's all right, Gene. That's all right, Gene." It was a shack, but it was a holy shack. It was something that was set aside that was very, very different, very humble. I think that's one thing I can say about Jimmy. He had sort of a determination about him, but he was a humble person. It didn't seem like those two characteristics would go together. Mm-hmm. But with Jimmy, they did. That's why he was so unique. He was very, very determined. He never wanted to have anything for himself, you know. He always dressed sort of poorly, and he was a painter, and he was still going out and painting and stuff, and probably didn't get more than 4 or 5 hours a night sleep, you know. So, but he had a vision in his heart, mm-hmm, about NA, and he never gave that vision up. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something about Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Talking about a vision. In 1985, Jimmy was in the hospital. And I drove from Oregon to the Los Angeles area to see Jimmy in the hospital. I went in there and he was laying in the bed. And I said, "How you doing, Jimmy?" "Oh, I'm doing fine, you know, I'm doing okay." So anyway, we talked about a lot of things, you know. And he said, and he says, "Yeah," he says, "and when I get out, you know, we got to get back and we got to do this and we got to write some of this stuff." And he's telling me about this vision that he had of when we were going to get out of the hospital. And what he was going to do, and he needed to call me and talk to me and stuff, and what he was going to do with other guys, and he was just really determined. 2 weeks later, he was dead. So he had a vision right up to the last day. You know, he never lost his vision. Mm-hmm. Never lost his vision. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one thing that that we have, you know, because we had a leader that had mm-hmm. a vision that never lost his vision. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can determine mm-hmm. what our vision is and keep that, mm-hmm. NA will grow. And it will grow not largely, mm-hmm. but it will grow with sincerity and character and strength. It won't be superficial. Jimmy was a guy that had strength mm-hmm. and character and firmness. But he didn't have a lot of things. He had an old beat-up pickup truck. Old beat-up pickup truck. He never wanted anything else because it was enough. Mm-hmm. His vision wasn't on material things. His vision wasn't on toys. Mm-hmm. His vision was on people. Mm-hmm. And he never lost that vision.
And with Jimmy, too, he was determined, but Jimmy's vision never included, as far as I know, becoming a superstar.
Mm-hmm. Right. Amen. That's right.
Jimmy never wanted, you know, said, oh, I'm going to start this thing and then get put on a speaking circuit, you know, and go around the world and be a star. You know, Jimmy was very, you'd walk into a meeting and he'd sit there and you wouldn't know anything. He wouldn't tell you anything. You just think he was some derelict that walked him off the street, practically. Yeah, you know, very humble man.
Right.
But he had a vision and he had strength. And he was kind.
Kind.
He was a kind man. Sylvie?
Ditto.
Ditto.
Probably completely.
Put your 3 cents in.
Yeah, my 3 cents.
Put it in anyway.
just this vision that he did have, and he never gave it up, no matter what. No matter what, he just would stay with it, which would be called, self-willed or determined, whatever. But it was a will that, like Gene said, that seemed incongruous, both of them together, with the humility and the willfulness. But it worked because the willfulness was to be of usefulness to others.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was the bottom line with him, and I just that's why he was able to keep the vision and to go with it, and just always have that idea that we got to do this, do that, da 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 da, till the end. And I'm sure took it on and is even going further with it, you know, with that kind of thinking. You know, thinking, ideas, and hope, and stuff. That's it. That really is. That can't be seen. That can't be touched. But it was there, and and the legacy is NA. And like Gene was saying, for not that it won't grow large or a lot. It may do that. I mean, it happened in AA with the Washingtonians, you know, all of that, but it also, it won't last. No matter how big it can get, if it doesn't have that heart there. And that is the bottom line, to just come from the heart. And it's not easy in this world of such toys and goodies and adulation and 15 minutes of fame and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm grateful and privileged to have known and been around Jimmy King. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Donna.
I have a question about what I think it was when you shared, Sylvia, about the 4-step, if you call it the first step of personal action. And I know when I got clean in my area and region, there were some worksheets that were going around, and we all had to write these worksheets. And mm-hmm. every time I thought about making a decision, I had to write about it and write the steps. And mm-hmm. now we have this work that we do. I was just wondering if you'd share a little bit about what your experience
is and what,
I guess, what the common practice was about working
with such a response. It was just that you did the steps with your sponsor he did it, and then it was like more of really trying to, in my experience, of just trying to get everything there and just thinking that you got to go through your whole life and just get all this down and all that, which I don't feel that way now, and that's not what I pass on now. But it's not really a historical question. That's more like a personal one. And there's no wrong way to do the fourth step, really. There is no wrong way. So whether it takes the workshop sheets or whatever, that's like a big thing that's going now. That's not my experience. But there is no wrong way. And when you hear or resonate with somebody that you can relate to with how, the simpler it is, that's where the simplicity, that's where the power is, in the simplicity of it. It's not about, you know, analyzing or getting into your head about anything. It's about just the fears, which is different than being afraid. Mm-hmm. See, I can have a car coming at me when I'm driving. I'm afraid it's going to hit me. My fears when I'm taking my inventory, they're not happening now. It's what's up here that keeps repeating and repeating itself in my head, and I want to be rid of it. But that's another thing, and hopefully that answered your question and not get too much in off the subject of history.
Okay. Hi, compared to you guys, I am a baby. Thank you. And yes, Narcotics Anonymous has completely changed in a lot of ways since I got here, from the literature to the service structure on down. And being, I guess, called a harvest junkie over the years, I'm wondering if you could explain to those of us who weren't here back then the differences in the service and how you operated it and how. I just think it got that simple.
My experience is how it got going was the pattern that was already in front of us, which was Alcoholics Anonymous. And we just followed that structure with their area, with their general service, and all of that, and Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy got it from Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. So we had a pattern set there. It was already in place. It's not anything that we, you know, we made up or did on our own. It was just being able to follow what works that was before us, tailored to the drug addict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in respect to that, and I don't mean to piss anybody off, but I happen to know, and if I was in church, I wouldn't be talking like this. But the spiritual roots of AA actually started in 1935 with Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, and they started with the Bible, and they started with the Sermon on the Mount, and there was books that AA recommended that we read in the beginning, and one of them was, I think it was Emmett Fox, Sermon on the Mount, and that comes out, that comes from the book of Matthew in the Bible. And I read some history about the beginning of AA, and Dr. Bob and his wife and Bill Wilson, when they would work with people in Akron, they would start out with a Bible study in the morning. And that's where a lot of the words in the AA book came from. That was the real roots of the AA 12 steps. The thing about the inventory, making amends, and all that kind of stuff, that comes right from the Bible. And, you know, you can hate the Bible or love it, but you can't deny the roots. And so that's all I'm saying. And there was people in AA, the third step, you know. The reason that was put in, because there was a guy that was an atheist. And so and those guys used to get on their knees and pray with the newcomer, you know. But there was a guy that came in that was an atheist. And they said, well, you know, this guy doesn't believe like we believe. He doesn't want to study the Bible. He doesn't want to get on his knees and pray, and you know, and so what are we going to do? Kick this guy out and tell him, hey, no, go back to Skid Row and die. No, we got to let him in. How are we going to do it? And so they decided at that time that it would be God as you understood him. Even if you didn't understand him, you know, you had a right to be here. And so that's why the 12-step program is so uniform that it engulfs everybody. You can be a Christian, a Buddhist, you can be the Pope, or you can be the devil, and you can belong. You know, doesn't make any difference. And that's just about as unique as you can get in any organization in the entire world. But it's so wonderful because we can respect people's lack of a higher power, or we can respect whatever higher power they have. And there's so many different religions and different, you know, and this is not a religious organization, but it does deal with a higher power. And that comes mostly from a religious basis, even if it's Christian or Hindu or... Now, Jimmy Kennan and I, we went to the ashram in La Crescenta, where we studied about Swami Paramananda and Vivekananda, and we studied under Mataji, the Divine Mother, who was the very first Hindu ordained woman minister that there ever was. Vivekananda brought her from India at the turn of the century, around 1900, and ordained her in Cohasset, Maine. They started an ashram up there, and then from there they moved to La Crescenta, and that's where Jimmy got involved. And I used to go there with Jimmy, and that was one of the most peaceful environments that I've ever been in. The physical environment was holy, it was set aside, it was beautiful, it was comfortable, it was peaceful. I still didn't have what I needed to change my character. And so after I changed my higher power from Paramananda to Jesus Christ, I started concentrating on my character rather than the surroundings in a church, you know, how the singing was or the environment or, you know, the beautiful setting or the building or any kind of this stuff. I wasn't impressed with that, and I'm still not impressed with it. I'm impressed what my higher power is doing with my character. See? Now, when I first came to NA, I was wanting to build a reputation. My reputation is what you think about me. Now I want to build a character. My character is what God knows about me, regardless of what you think about me. And so that's been my progression with my higher power from Jimmy and, you know, and everything that Jimmy taught me and the thing in the ashram, it was all very good and meaningful and helped me. But there wasn't the depth that I needed, you know, that I found later. So, yeah. Oh, this lady back here. This guy.
Hi,
thank you, sir. Have any of your stories been put in the NA book? Or, you know, people's stories that have been put
in the NA book?
As far as the history conference. This is the history conference. And this is NA.
Praise God. That's good. Yeah. Sylvia's story's in there?
Is it?
Isn't it?
I don't think so.
Well, tell you the truth, I never read the book. No.
No, I don't think mine's in there.
I read the important part. The first part deals with the steps. Well, my story's in there. And mm-hmm. Bill Beck, I don't think, Bill's speaking in the morning. Mm-hmm. And
Mel?
No. And Mel Hellman, he's speaking in the morning.
Is your story in there? Is his story in there?
Mel?
Uh-huh.
I don't think so. No.
Well, we don't know those people in that book.
I hardly know them myself because they're not today like they used to be. I wrote my story to. Well, I don't remember.
In the White Family.
Yeah, in the White Family.
Yeah, it was the first year, I guess.
Yeah.
Because that was when the White Family came
right.
out, right?
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
93, the pamphlet came out.
Yeah.
In 63.
Yeah. So anyway, that's. But my story's in there, and I you know, sign your book, write something in there, tell you how much I love you. Oh, the vicious circle. Yeah. Thanks.
I do. I'd like to know. My name is Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I'd like to know a little bit about when and how the third tradition was changed. It used to say honest desire. When and why was that changed? Who did it? Why? Who recognized honest?
That's an important question, and I'll tell you what. My
it was changed in 88. Yeah.
Well, remember when we wrote the pamphlet, though? Remember when we were putting together the white pamphlet?
Mm-hmm.
And we put that in, and then I think I had a problem with honest because my thinking was who was able to determine who's honesty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are we going to do? A victim if they, you know, if we decided they didn't have it. So we went through problems even if, in putting the pamphlet together, and I don't remember even now how those things ended up. And then they've changed it back, and they've, you know, done all of that, and I haven't kept up with all of that.
I
got my old books.
I get too many resentments, so I stay out of that.
Yeah.
I got enough to deal with.
We fight. We get in fights.
My question's Mary Jane.
Yeah, I was in there. Jean was there. Sylvia was there. We all were there.
Will you talk about that?
Well, all of NA was there. Everybody worked on that little pamphlet in one way or another.
Yeah, what was it like? How did you do it?
We just sat around four or five, six tables all in the end, and we just, Jimmy had, you know, like things we were going to deal with, and we just kind of went through. Is that how you remember it?
No.
No? You don't remember that one?
No.
Was I there?
No.
Well, and then there were rough drafts, and then we, you know,
rough
came
people.
In. Rough drafts for rough people, yeah. And we, you know, just, you know, kind of took votes or came to a group conscience on, you know, how we felt on that. Here, you talk about it.
I didn't see it that way, you know. I think Jimmy had it mostly written out.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we sat there and went through it with him. You don't remember that?
I didn't.
Mm-mm. Well, I remember that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going to look back on your inventory. Dishonesty, that was one of them. I got
That's
it right
what
there.
I remember was us sitting around with that pamphlet, and Jimmy came in and he had stuff written.
Yeah, well, maybe he did with you or, you know, mm-hmm. some of the more important people.
Mm-hmm. No, I wasn't important at all. Suma, no, yeah. That's what I remember.
I'm sure that's what happened with you. I myself had a kind of aversion about writing anything about my story at that time, so I just kind of
I didn't write.
I figured if I'm not going to write about it, I shouldn't have anything to say about it.
Oh, well, see, I wasn't as well as you.
Wait a minute. Well, maybe I'm wrong, because you're talking about the stories or you're talking about the whole pamphlet?
Well, the pamphlet in general, yeah.
Well, I think the pamphlet, and you know, other than the stories...
Jimmy did it.
Nicole went out, people submit their stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then people submit their
right.
stories.
And then we kind of sat down and kind of went through things. And saw how's this and how's that, and there was kind of discussion on a few points and things like that.
Yeah. And I wasn't involved in that.
Right, neither was I.
No, and you know the thing.
Oh, you know why? Maybe because Paul and I were.
You and Paul were involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you were involved in that, but we weren't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought all of us were.
No, like I say, only the important people. Wait, he had a question.
I'm an alpha.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
I know you were there, all three of you now, and even the speakers earlier, put a great emphasis on preaching program, very simple, good income. And in Europe, now there seems to be a problem in different things like behavior. I was wondering, back when the program was established in Congress, was there any guidelines that were set up for sponsorship or someone was when was emphasis put on, instead of just coming to meetings, start working steps?
Well, I think that was from the very beginning when I mean there was more emphasis on that than anything else. Steps and sponsorship. I mean, you could just say the first year it was steps and sponsorship, and there wasn't much of anything else. And
keep coming back.
And keep coming back, you know. And
mainly because when you say newcomers, we were all newcomers.
Right.
You know, really basically we were all just, you know, new ourselves. There wasn't, you know, we weren't there. We wouldn't even know. We just knew somebody was suffering, maybe with a little lesser just coming in, and we didn't even have that much more time or whatever than they did. It wasn't like that. It was just like you just saw the need because you were in it and you've got this new thing and whatever. But really, basically, we were all new, you know, new with this whole idea of living and alive with it and wanting to, you know, to whoever came in the door to share it with them, you know. So it wasn't yet to that stage of, you know, when they should have sponsorship and when we should be talking about this or that. It wasn't there for a long time because we were, you know, just holding on, you know, just hanging in there, you know, just because, like I said, there was only a couple of meetings. You know.
Okay, we need to wind down. They're about to kick us out of here. So
okay.
You guys have any questions?
Why don't we just wait until they kick us off?
I'm spoken like one of the true pioneers.
I was kicked out of the Bum Bum Club. The Tijuana
one.
Bum Bum Club.
Can we have a moment of silence and close with a wee version of Serenity? Serenity prayer. God,
grant us serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Just okay, I do want to let you know that Gary has tapes over there, including the three speakers tonight. Be very careful driving home, and I'll see you at breakfast.
Yes.